former U.S. Army paratrooper, historian, and conspiracy analyst, Tony Arterburn, joined by top researchers and guests, exploring the depths of our hidden history. Expose the crimes and cover-ups that plague our civilization and planet, and patrol the borders of our reality.
Reality.
From the parapolitical to the paranormal, in the psychological war for your body, soul, and mind. Be a paratruther.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Paratruther. I'm Tony Arterburn. I'm broadcasting, actually recording from beautiful Branson, Missouri. I've got both of my in-studio co-hosts and co-pilots. Beans the Brave is here, and of course, Charlie the Chocolate Labrador. And I need them both for this subject matter. I want to go back and tell a story before I introduce my other co-hosts that are joining me via StreamYard. When I got out of the military, I went and I applied to become a student at the University of Dallas, which is a prestigious school. I was so thankful they let me in. And it's a private Catholic university. They were started by priests and nuns that were kicked out of Hungary during the 1956 uprising. It was put down by the Soviet Union and Khrushchev. So these are pro-American, pro-freedom people. They also study the great books, and they had a great history department. So I only spent about a year and a half there. I was running a business at the time. You know, it was a little bit long in the tooth for, I felt like it was anyway. It was, you know, 18 and 19 year old kids, and I'd been through three foreign wars. I just didn't feel like I fit in, but I loved the classes. And I wrote a paper on the psychological impacts of war. And one of the things that I always thought was really interesting was the cost of life of World War One compared to the cost of life that of the 1918-1919 so-called Spanish flu. And I thought, well, we really don't ever talk about the Spanish flu, and it wiped out what, 3 to 4 times as many people as World War One. We always talk about World War One because war has this massive psychological impact on us. Natural disasters don't really touch what war does because it's a self-inflicted wound, and so on and so forth. Well, fast forward so many years of my own personal education, we come to the phase one of the Great Reset, if that's what you want to call it, the opening round of 2020. You get COVID-1984. I had been talking about vaccines and bioweapons for years before that, but this is what really kicked off my education. And then I come across some research about the origins of the Spanish flu, and it really turned that history on its head for me, because really and where we're going to talk about, there's theories, folks. These are just theories, right? But I think there's a well-balanced research and journalism that goes into you. I want you to think for yourself, but there's something wrong with the origin of the so-called Spanish flu. And the reason that I started this opening that way to talk about World War One, it's an extension of it, right? They're not really two separate things. And I think there's enough evidence to support that statement. And I'm going to jump right into the show. We've got, because we need his brain for the show, we've got Mr. Anderson. I didn't log into YouTube to pull up the clip of Agent Smith saying your name. But I do know for a fact, you can tell the audience, I mean, you're not showing your face, but I do know that your passport expires on September 11th, 2001. That is true, right, Mr. Anderson?
Yes.
Okay. So he's back. We've got Mr. Anderson's brain. Researcher without peer, Chris Graves, welcome back. We appreciate you being here, Chris.
Thank you, sir.
I mean me and my dogs and whoever's downloading the show.
That's right. I appreciate it. It's an honor.
Well, this is the way I wanted to run the show. So the article that I originally came across on the Spanish flu and the origins of it were on lewrockwell.com. Chris has been so kind to send me I mean, literally, I don't think my inbox emails can hold it. There's so many links and backups to what happened to the 1918 flu. Chris has done a great job. We're going to go over some of his links as well. But what I've done is I pulled up just two on the screen here, and I'm going to go over one. I'll put these in the show notes for anybody who wants to dig a little. I'm not going to read these. These are essays. I'm not going to read them in their entirety. I picked out some things, and what we're going to do is have a just discussion across with the panel as I go through. I think that's the best way to tackle this type of stuff. But this is the article that I wanted to go over. Actually, this is one of the articles that's associated with it. I wanted to put on the screen. This is the first of the 1918 Rockefeller U.S. Army Worldwide Pandemic. That's by Larry Romanoff, which is a great article. But the one I chose to go over was, did a vaccine experiment on U.S. soldiers cause the Spanish flu? This was published on March 30th, 2020. So 17 days after Trump signed the executive order to put Anthony Fauci in charge of the country for the rest of his presidency. And this one really has a lot more highlights and things. I'm going to put both of those articles in the links, and then whatever the panel and whatever we go over, we can also put in there as well. But this is a good one to start with. This is, again, lewrockwell.com. Kevin Berry put this out. This is the article that I came across in 2020 doing research for my daily radio show. And I never actually went over the whole article, but I thought it was just groundbreaking stuff. And it's not like just the rantings of someone who suspects. There's tons of source material here.
And Tony, one question. Why are you allowing Burt's Gold Page to be an advertiser for this podcast?
Well, if you look at lewrockwell.com, Burt's Gold Page comes up. And that's a great question, Mr. Anderson. And of course, I will tell the audience where they can buy physical gold and silver. But Burt's Gold Page is it's a archive of a gentleman who would put his articles up here for Lou Rockwell. And I don't think he's alive anymore. So we'll just let Burt's Gold Page be right up there.
Serious answer to an unserious question. Thank you.
Some good Donald Jeffries articles on Lou Rockwell as well.
Yes, and Gary D. Barnett, and among others. Okay, we'll have to come back and examine Burt's Gold Pages another time. Let me get into this article. This is did a vaccine experiment on U.S. soldiers cause the Spanish flu? By Kevin Berry. Again, came out on March 30th, 2020. The so-called Spanish influenza epidemic of 1918 and the Rockefeller's Institute crude bacterial meningitis vaccination experiment on U.S. troops. And it says the 1918-1919 bacterial vaccine experiment may have killed 50 to 100 million people. And I love this quote. I didn't ever know where it had came from, but it's the first casualty of war is the truth. And that comes from U.S. Senator Hiram Johnson from 1918. I didn't know that. That's where it originated from. And these are all in quotations. We'll go through the article here. So the question is whether we have vaccine experiments performed on fully functioning adults and on children who are potentially contributors to society to perform initial studies in children and adults and soldiers who are human in form, but not in social potential. This is from Dr. Stanley Plotkin, virologist who spent years working at the Children's Hospital at Philadelphia and the University of Pennsylvania, associate of Paul Offit, credited with inventing the rubella vaccine and advisor of pharmaceutical corporations. If you get that quote, it says the question, I'm going to read it again. The question is whether we are to have a vaccine experiments performed on fully functioning adults and on children who are potentially contributors to society, or perform initial studies in children and adults and soldiers who are human in form, but not in social potential.
People that they consider garbage. In my opinion.
That's a nice way of saying expendable people.
Yes.
And during the war years, again, this is another quotation from the study. During the war years, 1918-1919, the U.S. Army ballooned to 6 million men, with 2 million men being sent overseas. The Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research took advantage of this new pool of human guinea pigs to conduct vaccine experiments. the American Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research and its experimental bacterial meningococcal vaccine may have killed 50 to 100 million people in 1918-1919. And is a far less, I love this, and is a far less effective slogan than overly simplistic vaccines save lives. The crude vaccine used in Fort Riley in the Fort Riley experiment on soldiers was made in horses. Okay. Think about that. It was cultured in horses. According to a 2008 National Institute of Health paper, bacterial pneumonia was the killer in a minimum of 92.7% of the pandemic autopsies reviewed. And I want to say, and we're going to get to that, I want to say it was like 9,000 autopsies that they conducted. And that was the percentage. Another quote, clean water, sanitation, flushing toilets, refrigerated foods, and healthy diets have done and still do far more to protect humanity from infectious diseases than any other vaccine program.
Yeah.
In 1918, the vaccine industry experimented on soldiers with disastrous results. But in 2018, the vaccine industry experiments on infants every day. Again, he wrote this originally in 2018. So this isn't just an article that was like, okay, we have, you know, we're facing a new pandemic and there's going to be a new vaccine and this is a novel virus. So we're going to go research the past. And this is people that were talking about this before Fauci became president.
Right.
The Spanish flu killed an estimated 50 to 100 million people during a pandemic. What if the story we have been told about the pandemic isn't true? What if instead the killer infection was neither the flu nor Spanish in origin? And then he goes on to a summary. It says, the reason modern technology has not been able to pinpoint the killer influenza strain from this pandemic is because influenza was not the killer. Which is interesting because you get conflicting information on this, guys. And I want to throw it back to both of y'all before we just continue on. But the term influenza, it harkens from the, I want to say the Latin, which means influential. It's like something that happens, like it's a disease of the what you would consider the zeitgeist, like the spirit of the age or whatever. It's the current thing. It's the reason you don't have a vaccine. You have a shot for the flu, but it, because it mutates and because it changes and because it's just something that's around, even though in 2020, if you
disappeared,
first time disappeared. Remember, there was like, I remember being like hosting InfoWars and like there was I pull up the stories and I mean, it was like the Guardian was, I mean, this major papers, like the flu is 97%.
The Scientific American publication came out and had a huge article saying that. Scientific American.
It's just like COVID eats the flu or something. We live in, it's just clown times, but yeah, this, it's influential, ladies and gentlemen. More soldiers died during World War I from diseases than from bullets. The pandemic was not flu. An estimated 95% or higher of the deaths were caused by bacterial pneumonia, not influenza or a virus. The pandemic was not Spanish. The first cases of bacterial pneumonia in 1918 traced back to a military base in Fort Riley, Kansas.
And there were a lot of bases around Kansas and areas that had outbreaks.
Yeah,
I think what's really interesting, Tony, is going back and talking about basically the Rockefeller Institute, because I don't know why at the very beginning, at the formation of that institute, and the doctor who actually formed it created John Hopkins Medical Institute. He was a pretty renowned doctor. But I don't know why they just didn't use Dr. Bill Levingston's homebrew to fight this stuff from the beginning.
You got to tell people what that is.
Oh, so that's a Devil Bill or William Rockefeller. And he had this abortion serum, right, Tony?
His abortion juice. Yeah, that was John D. Rockefeller's father.
Right.
Devil Bill. Yeah, he was he traveled around and I don't want to get too off topic. Wasn't some of his... His serums and some of his lotions and potions and all these things he sold as a quack He was like, he was also a bigamist. Like he was married. He had like two, like a family franchise. Like had one set up in one town and then one in another.
Yeah. Now it's called Essential Oils, I think.
But that was funny. What was weird is his son became like this giant, well, not that we came this hairless mole rat who controlled massive amounts of energy and oil, but
like William Smith's wife, they just lose their hair.
Somebody's gonna come slap you. but no, they were made out of crude oil. Like they were I mean, it's like the irony of that, but so you need Dr.
Lee. Yeah. Dr. Yeah, Lee, anyways, I presume. Just the idea of it coming from that institute, which they were trying to be like the Pasteur Institute in France and the Koch Institute in, I think it was England at the time. And they had just, they were trying to get away from this age of the country doctor and transform it into a new modern age where there were lots of vaccines. And so they had recently developed smallpox, rabies. I didn't know this, but it said anthrax. I know you've had that one, right, Tony?
Yeah,
and
a bunch of them.
And the other one was meningitis. And that's originally how they fought this, right? They fought it like it was measles, I think, or meningitis. It was some form of bacterial pneumonia. And so they had the means at their disposal because of the draft to give a lot of people who were unwilling to say no to forced vaccinations, all these vaccinations, which we saw recently in recent years. I mean, they tried to do it where I worked and they still do it to kids. Like one of the things RFK Jr. brought up in a debate I saw recently that was televised, he's just like, look at all the vaccines that they suggest that you give to children now. Like, why does a child need a hepatitis B vaccine? Are they sexually active? Like when I was a kid, you had three. But anyways, that's what it kind of reminds me of, this whole Rockefeller Institute is kind of putting us in this new pharmaceutical age and pushing these vaccines on us. But I think it's interesting in what you're reading and then what Chris sent that these vaccinations could have had a lot to do with the actual outbreak that happened in the trenches.
And I'll ask people that are listening to honestly evaluate what I'm about to say, because I know it just from my own life. But when I was on air in 2020, I kept asking people, look in your phone, tell me who you know that's sick with COVID-19, because I couldn't find anybody. And I mean that. I'm a journalist. I'm on the radio. I mean, shortwave, and I'm on a radio station in San Antonio. I have a podcast. I'm talking to people on InfoWars. I was everywhere. I couldn't find anybody who actually was sick, like that didn't have like a normal, like regular, you know, just sick from being alive, you know, like having the cold or having the flu or whatever.
Yeah.
However, that changed in 2021. And I know Mr. Anderson will attest to this, because we both saw it, and so almost everyone I knew in 2021 started to get some form of COVID or some variant of it. Well, what changed in 21? There was
vaccines. Sorry, I had a cough. vaccines?
Yes.
Can I get vaccines for $500, Alex?
Yeah, and by the summertime. And so you shouldn't be getting like flu in the summertime, because the flu, it really comes down to how your vitamin D levels. And if there's enough vitamin D and you have enough temperature outside, the virus doesn't stay on surfaces and it doesn't aerosol, right?
It's supposed to burn out in the summer.
Burn off, right?
Yeah.
Well, you just go back and think about that. When did people, you know, and so you know, I ended up getting it in 22 eventually, but it's just that vaccine, in my opinion, we have no other way. There was a Nobel laureate I gave this article to my doctor. He was like, have you heard anything on this? I go, yeah. And I sent him tons of links. There was that, and I forgot to pull it up, but it was on the New American, you know, in 2021, about the guy was saying, the variants, you know, like eventually ended in Omicron or whatever, you know, but the variants are caused by the vaccine.
It sounds like a transformer.
That's what I said.
I always thought that. Yeah.
I said it sounds like a Mercury Theater. Like it came from space, the Omicron, you know.
Omicron in the UFOs tonight at 9:00 p.m. Yeah.
Revenge of the Omicron.
Anyway, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
I'll keep going on the article and then we'll just kind of go back and forth, because this is the best way to cover one of these things that are reading it all the way through. We can't do the whole article, folks, but definitely some of the highlights here. From January 21 to June 4th, 1918, an experimental bacterial meningitis vaccine cultured in horses by the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research in New York was injected into soldiers at Fort Riley. During the remainder of 1918, as those soldiers, often living and traveling under poor sanitary conditions, were sent to Europe to fight, they spread bacteria at every stop between Kansas and the frontline trenches in France. One study described soldiers with active infections who were aerosolizing the bacteria that colonized their noses and throats, while others, often in the same breathing spaces, were profoundly susceptible to invasion and a rapid spread through their lungs by their own and others colonizing bacteria. The Spanish flu, and he puts this in quotations, attacked healthy people in their prime. Bacterial pneumonia attacks healthy people in their prime. Flu attacks the young, old, and immunocompromised. When World War II ended on November 11, 1918, soldiers returned to their home countries and colonial outposts, spreading the killer bacterial pneumonia worldwide. And I'll read this last thing, and then we'll discuss this. During World War I, the Rockefeller Institute also sent the meningococcal serum to England, France, Belgium, Italy, and other countries, helping spread the epidemic worldwide.
I was going to bring that up. Yep. Yeah.
This was not taught in school. This was, this is not in history class.
You know, well, I think even the part of it, the Spanish flu, and they were neutral during the war. So their press wasn't handicapped in the sense that they only had to push propaganda, because all the other countries, especially the Allied countries, didn't want the Central Powers to know they were weakened. So Spain was the first to talk about it. Their king in Madrid actually got it. And so they blew the whistle. And I didn't even know this for the longest time. I mean, it didn't come from Spain. They were just the first to talk about it, what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so. And I think there's another reason too. And he breaks that down. I'm pretty sure you covered most of it, but that's the neutrality of Spain, not being a real player in any part of the war. It wasn't dangerous to use them as anything, because you had these soldiers in the trench warfare. They were all supposed to be home by Christmas 1914, but by 1918, no, just slaughter pens. The horrors of 19th century warfare tactics with 20th century weapons. And you had the trenches were just a stalemate and just a wasteland. And you had these soldiers that were also worried about getting sick now. And so they had to put it on something. So they called it the Spanish flu, which was like the original misdirection. You know, we're starting to see some of that now, where you talk about, I mean, by the way, I just talked about an America Unplugged. I opened up on yesterday. I said, oh, don't worry, folks. I mean, you don't even need to talk anymore. The U.S. government stopped funding the Wuhan lab.
I was going to say, yeah.
It just now stopped, like last week. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? That's like me hiring a hitman and then, to take care of my enemies. And then I say, well, I don't pay him anymore. You know, I stopped paying the hitman.
Yeah. The China virus, Tony.
Yes, the China virus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So many misdirections here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And can I add one more thing, too, that I found interesting when looking into this subject was the topic of also the vaccines, but also, I mean, during World War I, they were gassing each other, right? And there were lots of mustard gases, and nitrogen mustards are genotoxic. I mean, there's lots of studies and essays that go into this about they can lead to genetic mutations, right? And so that was a topic of concern, right or wrong, that came up, you know, with the wave of COVID-19 and the new mRNA vaccines. So I don't know. I found that very interesting as well.
Absolutely.
Do you have any thoughts on that, guys?
Well, Tony?
Sorry. No, go ahead, Chris.
Well, no, I was just going to say, another thing that I don't think is mentioned in the article is the whole concept of the masks. There were a lot of people that didn't want to wear the masks back then. And there were some researchers and scientists at the time that thought the mask wearing was contributing to the people getting sick and dying too. And I found a whole bunch of articles on that, but But going back to what you were saying, you were bringing up, Mr. Anderson, but what was the base? Like, I was thinking about the mask thing, so I apologize. What he had you just brought up a second ago?
Oh, just the idea of mustard gas.
Oh, mustard
gas. And how it was used in the trenches during the war. And those have been shown to lead to genetic modifications. And
I think that could be like when you fast forward to Vietnam with Agent Orange, things like that. Maybe they were testing it, unfortunately, on the soldiers. Maybe it's not out of the realm of possibility to suggest that. You know, they're testing like they're injecting soldiers back then. Even with the article here, you know, with stuff that came from horses and things like cultured and things. So
that seemed to be pretty common at the time. There are these two other doctors who were kind of in a race with this Dr. Welch from the Rockefeller Institute, and they were Park and Williams. And I think they were known for developing the diphtheria vaccine, or however you pronounce it. It was the same thing. You inject horses with the virus and you use the horse's blood to extract antibodies. I mean, it's a very strange process, but it seemed commonplace then. But I don't even know how they understood things like you were talking about influenza and where that word comes from, Tony. I mean, they didn't have things like scanning electron microscopes back then. They couldn't see things that were 10 nanometers in length. Right. So how they could even say what a virus was conclusively or something like that, it boggles my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's if you go back and you have to kind of look at it through the lens of what you just said, is like the technology that they had. And what they did have, though, is they had a complete control of what we would consider the mainstream media, even more so than they did. There was a while where it was decentralized a bit more, but it did break up, and there was more papers and more, you know, especially with the advent of the radio, which we'll get to, which is another aspect of the theory about all of this stuff, like changes in technology. Electrification, radio waves, you know, causing human adaptation to that. Could that be a causation? Which to me is a lot more, has more scientific basis than all of a sudden there was this disease and everybody got it. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't matter. And it, by the way, it started and it went away too.
Yeah.
Which is something that doesn't make any sense either, right? When you didn't have, it's one thing to talk about smallpox. The smallpox is a DNA virus. And again, I'm not a virologist, not a medical expert. I always have to qualify that when you talk about any of this crap anymore. Yeah. But you have a DNA virus. So the theory is you could introduce a weakened part of that virus into a human, and your immune system would be able to handle that weakened virus and create antibodies because it would recognize it again. Well, the difference between that and this is that this is RNA. And if anything else, you know, if you're even talking about the flu or whatever that is, and it changes all the time, that's why we don't have a vaccine for it. No matter what your grocery store says, like, come get your flu shot. You have a shot for it.
Right.
But there's a difference between a vaccine and an inoculation and whatever the hell this is, you know, because you're just getting a shot every year. And could it be that the shot itself is what gives everybody the flu? Right. I know I get the flu every time I get a shot. I don't get it anymore. I had to get it in the military. I don't want one ever again.
Yeah. There's so many people that got boosters too, that they kept getting COVID. It's like, why do you keep doing that? You know what I mean? And then they were able to kind of convince everybody, not kind of, flat out convince everybody that the vaccine now meant that it wouldn't be, you know, the effects wouldn't be as harsh. No, the vaccine is supposed to prevent you from getting the thing in the first place. Not right. lessen the effects of the. It's, just, it's mind boggling.
We're going to take it from a level 9 to a level 7 on the shitty scale, folks.
Chris, the Dana Carvey bit he just did recently when he imitated Fauci, and he's like, you get so many boosts, you get your daily shot. And he's like, and you're only going to be protected between the time you get out of the building until you get to your car. But it's a beautiful 37 seconds, you know, like you're going to have that protection for 37 seconds.
Remember, you got to be 6 feet apart also.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to stay six feet apart.
Exactly.
Okay? Don't worry.
Chris, Tony and I were laughing a little bit before you joined before the show, but you remember Trump's trading cards?
Oh,
remember he was selling those? And there was one that was a meme of him as a cowboy with his shirt tucked in and a big cowboy hat and gut sticking over. And he's like, get your shots. I got mine. They're good.
They're good. He wasn't there one where he was Superman too? I was like, gross.
Big Q on his chest. The American Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research and its experimental bacterial meningococcal vaccine may have killed 50 to 100 people, 100 million people in 1918 to 1919. And then this is something that I read it before, but I wanted to read it again. This is something that Kevin Berry put up. It's a far less effective sales slogan than the oversimplistic vaccine save lives, which I thought was pretty funny. This is the guy who authored. I want to make sure I give Kevin Berry all the attribution I can. We're taking his article and making a show out of it. The disease which killed so many was not the flu, nor was it a virus. It was bacterial. During the mid-2000s, there was much talk about pandemic preparedness. Influenza vaccine manufacturers in the United States received billions of taxpayer dollars to develop vaccines to make sure that we don't have another pandemic, quote, flu like the one in 1918 and 1919. Remember, this is all leading up to COVID-1984. Capitalizing on the flu part of the Spanish flu helped vaccine manufacturers procure billion-dollar checks from governments, even though scientists knew at the time that bacterial pneumonia was the real killer. He says, it's not my opinion that bacterial pneumonia was the real killer. Thousands of autopsies confirm this fact. According to a 2008 National Institute of Health paper, bacterial pneumonia was the killer in a minimum of 92.7% of the 1918-1919 autopsies reviewed. It is likely higher than 92.7%. The researchers looked at more than 9,000 autopsies. There were no negative bacterial lung cultures sampled. Think about that. And think about how interesting it is. You have a 1918-1919 pandemic, right? 100 years later, you get COVID-19. Now, there wasn't a COVID-20 or 21 or 22 or 23, mind you. But we did get COVID-19, a virus, to my understanding. Has anybody ever really truly isolated it? What did you find in your research for Don Jeffries, Chris?
No, it has not. It hasn't been isolated at all. Nope.
Yeah. I mean, there's various studies that have gone on about what it is. I mean, you know, RFK Jr. just got in trouble for saying that, an obvious fact that bioweapons labs around the world make race specific bioweapons. Right. They do.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting
racist to say. That's what Nazi scientists do. What are you talking about?
This sounds crazy too, Tony, but it's an offshoot, but it was part of World War I, but the whole Balfour Agreement. And when that was structured, between Arthur Balfour, who used to be the prime minister, right? And he was talking to Lord Lionel Walter Rothschild. It's always funny to me how they put a Rothschild in every major Western country and controlled the banking institutions. But they had support for a national home for the Jewish people. And that's what this declaration said, right? The only problem was they would have to get Palestine from the Ottoman Empire, right? Which the Ottoman Empire was part of the Central Powers during the war. But yeah, they guaranteed it. I mean, it was all so weird to me, reading about that and kind of this rise in Zionism during the Jewish Enlightenment, where there's almost a splintering of the Jewish community and those who consider themselves like Jewish in a religious sense, and those who said, no, that's my nationality, my ethnicity, I want a home state. Right. So originally, I think England said, we'll put you in Uganda, but that they wanted Jerusalem. So I don't know, all that was hitting around the same time. And the real hiccup there was the UK couldn't promise that to them at the time because that was part of the Ottoman Empire. The war wasn't over. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I just thought that was kind of strange timing for that declaration or agreement.
Nothing's a coincidence.
Well, I would say that there's some possible quid pro quo with the Balfour Declaration and America's entrance into the war. If you recall, the sinking of the Lusitania was in May of 1915. Most people think it was right around 1917 and then America got into war. That's not true. As a matter of fact, it happened again, 1915. 1916, Woodrow Wilson runs for re-election. He ran on the slogan, he kept us out of war. The first thing he does, and people forget, inauguration was always March 4th. It was 3-4. Up until Franklin Roosevelt, he just said, he was his third term. He goes, he just canceled that. Said, let's just do it, you know, in January and get it over with. We don't have to wait till March. I'm president. I'll just be president then too. So that's, but before that, it was always March. We went to war in April of 1917. So as soon as he was sworn in again, Woodrow Wilson took us to war, had a declaration of war declared. I think there was a quid pro quo for getting America into the war. You know, the banking industry, the putting pressure on its puppets in the United States to get us into the war. And that was an exchange for the homeland, possibly. I mean, you look at or Palestine being declared that, and it was, you know, again, it was not under, it was part of the Ottoman Empire. But at the time, you know, one of the things that happened to Winston Churchill, he was First Lord of the Admiralty during the First World War. He's in his 30s. So he's like First Lord of the Admiralty, which is like a huge office. That there's really no comparison here in the United States to what First Lord is, but it's right up there with Prime Minister. I mean, it's like probably just Prime Minister adjacent. And he was, you know, on his rise to power, but he had this plan to open up a second front in Gallipoli, which was Turkish. It was going to open up a second front. They called Turkey the sick man of Europe, right? This is what they would, because it was an empire for a long time, but it didn't have the military prowess. It didn't have the organization that the British Empire did or many of the European continental powers. It just, they called it the sick man of Europe, but they were allied with Germany. So they thought that the British thought that they could open it up. And that's what brought Churchill down. That's why he lost the First Lord. It was just a botched deal. It didn't go off right. So there was a need for troops. There was a need for American entrance because they just were bloodied. And that was the deal. And again, they didn't control it, but they promised it. And so there's some kind of back channel deal, along with one other thing, which was the Zimmerman telegram. And I don't know if you guys know about what the Zimmerman telegram was, but that was an agent in Germany who reportedly had some ties to the House of Rothschild and other banking houses that went and sent a telegram to the consulate in Mexico stating if Mexico would join the war, that they would, with Germany, that when Germany conquered the U.S., they would give back the territories that they lost in the, you know, 1840s. This is true.
Did not know this.
This was to inflame a sentiment in the U.S. So there was this triangulation of things happening because America had always been isolationist. It was in our founding documents. I mean, if you look at Washington's inaugural, you know, he talked about staying out of foreign entanglements. So Thomas Jefferson spoke about peace, commerce, and honest friendship. John Quincy Adams said, America's not designed to go abroad in search of monsters to destroy. This was part of our culture, right? Was to stay out of European wars.
Right.
That's why the Zimmerman telegram comes later. But the Lusitania didn't have the effect that they wanted it to have, even though, by the way, Winston Churchill supposedly is the one that told them to go on the route that they went on so they would get hit. And they'd loaded
it up. And the German embassy put it in newspapers saying that any ship, regardless of the cargo, if they have a British flag on there, we're going to sink you. And they put this in American newspapers, and people still got on that. I've never understood that. How crazy do you have to be to understand there's a war going on there? What are you doing?
Well, it's kind of like getting in a submarine made out of fiberglass with a, you know, an arcade game control.
Anybody got some double A's?
I got half $1 million to get on this death doing getting a water heater and go down and see the Titanic. No, I mean, but I think there's connections here, you know. Yeah. History is not what it seems. It's one of the reasons that I do the show and the research that I do. I don't know everything. But I do know that, you know, you brought up a great point, Mr. Anderson. You're talking about outliers, and, you know, what we're looking at is there's an extension of World War One. It's built into this. Now, was this their plan to, like, have 50 to 100 million casualties worldwide of whatever came out of Fort Riley, Kansas? Hard to say.
But it stopped the spring offensive. It stopped the spring offensive, whether it was intended or not. I mean, that there was basically the Allies were recovering from the same time that the Germans launched their spring offensive. And then all the Germans got sick, right? Because I think at that time they were fighting a war on two fronts, but they eliminated the Russian part, right? Because the, what was that general's name? The German, I forget his name, something like Ludendorff.
Yeah, Ludendorff.
But he created some type of peace treaties, right, with Russia, because they were going through, they had gone through their October Revolution, and he actually got Lenin back to Russia so that they thought they might have in control just fighting on the Western Front again, and then this hit them. I don't know. That was kind of my understanding. What do you
think? You get the term Dolchlos, which was the stab in the back. That's where you read about that in Mein Kampf, right? And the origin of that, of Germany being stabbed in the back at that time. And of course, this is also the time of Max Warburg, who was the head of the central bank in Germany, whose brother Paul Warburg was the head of the central bank in the United States of America, Federal Reserve, right? His brother, Max, our arch enemy in Germany, they put Lenin on a sealed train car filled with gold and sent him to Russia to start the revolution, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, these are strange right. times. This is where you get the birth of communism. I heard a joke the other day. It was pretty funny. And somebody retold it. It was from Reagan. I guess he used this joke a lot. And there was two men standing in the middle of Red Square. And it's kind of desolate and, you know, very drab. Everything's very serious, very gray. Nothing, no happiness, no anything. And they were standing there and they said, one of the guys says, so this is what communism looks like. And the other guy says, no. It gets much, much worse. It gets much, much worse. I thought it was great. Let me give a few more licks into this article. This is kind of covering what the bacterial pneumonia was, where it originated. Where did the Spanish flu bacterial pneumonia of 1918-1919 originate? When the United States declared war on April 1917, the fledgling pharmaceutical industry had something they'd never had before, a large supply of human test subjects in the form of U.S. military's first draft. I know that very well. I was part of those things. Pre-war in 1917, the U.S. Army was 286,000 men. Post-war in 1920, the U.S. Army disbanded and had only 296,000 men. During the war years, 1918 and 19, the U.S. Army ballooned to 6 million men, with 2 million men being sent overseas. The Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research took advantage of the new pool of human guinea pigs to conduct vaccine experiments. There's a report on anti-meningitis vaccination and observations on agglutinins. If I'm saying that right, in the blood of chronic meningitis carriers, and this is a link to other studies. And this is where you get in, Mr. Anderson was referring to Dr. Gates in here. Between January 21st and June 4th of 1918, Dr. Gates reports on an experiment where soldiers were given three doses of the bacterial meningitis vaccine. Those conducting the experiment on the soldiers were just spitballing dosages of vaccine serum made in horses. And this is like the beginning of vaccine. That's the origin story of vaccines, really. I mean, we always hear about inoculating on smallpox, which is an inoculation is a little bit different than a vaccine. I mean, because you have the needle involved here. You have the injection site. 4,792 men received the first dose, but only 4,257 got the second dose, down 11%, and only 3,702 received all three doses. A total of 1,090 men were not there for the third dose. What happened to these soldiers? Were they shipped east by train from Kansas to board a ship to Europe? Were they in the Fort Riley Hospital? Dr. Gates' report doesn't tell us. Well, isn't it interesting, and Mr. Anderson brought this up, there's a Dr. Gates. Well, at least he's a doctor, you know, this time. You go back 100 years, there's a Gates involved, and he's giving you the shot.
I tried to find out if he was related to the Gates that you're referring to, and I couldn't find anything on it. But it wouldn't shock me.
No. I wonder.
A real gateway drug there, huh?
He's a real Gatesway.
Real Gatesway.
I'm still trying to figure out. I'm still trying to figure out a comeback on the Burt's Gold page for you, but I just.
I'm sorry. You know, I like to throw you off a little bit. But speaking of origin stories, I heard this weird one, Tony. You probably heard of this one, Chris. I don't know, but it involved bird bass and rats and birds. You know what I'm talking about?
you're doing like such a deep reference that, you know.
It's an eastbound reference, eastbound and down.
Eastbound and down. Okay, yeah. Kenny Powers.
Kenny Powers. Yeah,
about how a new type of AIDS was made.
I know that you had to live with you, and I have at your house. So I would know that.
I know. Well, this show
and
is
the writer of the show.
Right.
Good old Kenny Powers.
Have you watched that, Chris?
Oh, yeah. That's been quite a few years now, actually. Yeah.
Yes. By March of the year, 100 men a day were entering the infirmary at Fort Riley. So they got 6 million men under arms. Before that, you had 296,000 troops all across with, you know, National Guard and reserves for World War One. So this massive amount of men to experiment on, and you got 100 men a day were entering the infirmary at Fort Riley. Are some of these men missing from Dr. Gates' reports, the ones who did not get the second or third dose? And they, you know, this is an open question. Did they die? What happened to them? Shortly before breakfast on Monday, March 11th, the first domino would fall, signaling the commencement of the first wave of the 1918 influenza. Company cook Albert Gitchell reported to the camp infirmary with complaints of a bad cold. Right behind him came Corporal Lee W. Drake, voicing similar complaints. By noon, Camp Surgeon Edward Schreiner had over 100 sick men in his hands, all apparently suffering from the same malady. Again, Gates does not report that several of the men in the experiment had flu-like symptoms, coughs, vomiting, and diarrhea after receiving the vaccine. These symptoms are a disaster for men living in barracks, traveling on trains to the Atlantic coast, sailing to Europe. Oh, yeah, it's awful. Have you ever been around a bunch of sick guys? Like, I mean, you're all in close quarters. I remember when I was in Kuwait, you always get some bad, like, upper respiratory. Every time I deployed, every time I went to war, it's always something like in my throat. You'd always just get some kind of just, I recall in Afghanistan, you talk about just awful conditions and being around all the, you know, we're taking prisoner people off the battlefield and makeshift barracks. We bulldozed the Soviet site that was, I mean, there was like parts of Hind helicopters, looked like the set of Rambo 3 or something in there. Like it was just in its desolate, this old airport. And got the worst infection of my, it was just in my throat and I could not shake it. I just had the chills and fever and like you couldn't hardly talk and your throat swelled up. And I went and got Cipro from the medical tent. me and my sergeant stole it. I think the statute of limitations has run out, but yeah, I stole Cipro.
Well, Jerome Hauer on 9/11, 2001 prescribed the White House Cipro. And then what did we have? About a week and a half later, the first anthrax letter, right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Oh, that's true. Oh, just a coincidence, though, Chris. By the time I got to Iraq, I was a little bit smarter. I decided not to stay in the big tents with everybody in Kuwait while we're waiting to go into the invasion of Iraq. And I slept on top of what's called an ISU-90 at night in the Kuwaiti desert. I had a little pad. And I just sleep up there on top of it. I had to climb up a generator, but I'd sleep by. I still got sick though. I was popping like 800 milligram Motrins rolling into Mosul because my throat just, again, you just get around a bunch of people and it's dirty. There's no sanitation.
Yeah.
And you get sick. And who knows? By the way, too, what happened right before we left? Everybody got a just ton of vaccinations.
Yeah.
I remember when they gave me the anthrax vaccine, I got the anthrax, the smallpox, and all the host of everything, like a pincushion. You get hit the same day. But I'll never forget, and this is a true story, when they gave me the anthrax vaccine, it's like from a gun. And I've never felt anything like it, but I could feel it go through my heart.
Yeah, you told me that once.
And I just remember going, I could feel my, I never felt my heart before. Like I felt it through my heart. I went, whoo. And it was like, I ended up getting like pox and stuff coming. It was the weird, it was definitely was in my bloodstream. I'm sure it still is, right?
That's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see. I'm just kind of going through.
And your heart grew three sizes that day, didn't it, Tony?
I just bigger for everyone around me.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Again, this is the overwhelming evidence that something else happened.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, you talk about a patient zero or the origin story of a disease. To me, this is what it looks like. You start screwing around with something, you get something to go from an infection to aerosolization, and where it's, you know, it's airborne, it's in the breathable space. To me, that's much more of an explanation than in Spain, one day some guy got really sick. Like,
well, you know, they actually, the propaganda was working in various different ways. I noticed, because I just put in one other article right in the group chat that we have right here that we share. And the title is, it's from National Geographic, and it says that the Spanish flu 1918 China origins pandemic science health. And that was another narrative, apparently. China, even back then. They said it spread across Canada. Sorry.
No, you go ahead, Chris. I was just going to say, Tony and I were talking a little bit about this, but please, I think this is important.
Oh, yeah. No, that was pretty much it. I didn't know if Tony, after this article, if you wanted to just show it on the screen real quick, just to show you, they had different angles of this propaganda of where the origins came from back then, even. And China was involved with that, too, supposedly. So I don't know what to make of it. I mean, just like with COVID, most people like to say Wuhan, but there's other people like our friend Donald that he has different ideas. And then you ask other people and they think that it was kind of released around the same time in various parts of the world, simultaneously even. You know, you have different things, theories. But
I remember hearing people kind of referring to China as like the origin of all viruses back in 2020. Like, I was like, oh, it all come, every major pandemic worldwide, it always comes from China, like the Silk Road going back, right, you know, centuries. And I'm like, is that really the case? And I don't know. I mean, again, it seems like a lot of propaganda.
Yeah.
Yes. So for this one, Chris, I believe according to my understanding, what happened was China was neutral during the war, but Japan was part of the Allies. And so they felt a lot of pressure, China did, to be involved in the war. They thought maybe post-war during Reconstruction, they might get some, a tip of the hat to them or something like that. But they didn't want Chinese people actively involved in warfare in the trenches. So what they did was ship workers. And so they shipped them to Canada, and then they traversed across Canada in these boxcars that were designed for cattle, all the way to Halifax, which they'd board ships and then be sent to France and dig trenches. And a lot of them, according to what I read, grew sick. And that was one of the potential origins, or one of the ones that I saw was visited for the Spanish flu.
Yep. And they also said the mask thing, and then also vaccinations possibly. So this was going on even back then, you know, and you can't really pinpoint it. I think that's the point.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, I thought this was a nice topic, actually, because we had done the year 1913. This wasn't very far removed. We skipped ahead a little bit there, and it's easy to go back a little bit from, you know, exactly 1918, because, again, they don't really pinpoint exactly where this outbreak came from or where it stemmed from.
Yeah.
But it just makes you think about what happened a couple of years ago to us, and, you know, Event 201, right, Tony and Chris, and it's just, it's all very strange how it's mapped out.
Dark winter.
I mean, yeah.
You mentioned Johns Hopkins.
Yeah.
You know, like Johns Hopkins shows up in every simulation.
Good point.
Going back to Dark Winter. I mean, they're part of every major. As a matter of fact, I mean, wasn't it Johns Hopkins that did the SPARS?
Yes.
The document and the SPARS simulation. And that is fascinating. 2017 SPARS. They mapped out what was going to happen and hasn't really completely followed the playbook, but it was real close to the SPARS document.
They had like a Fauci like character that
would be celebrities and like the vaccine didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, and it caused, there was injuries and like it just the whole thing, like the amount of push to get it, the rollout, it was really quick. And then there's a Fauci figure who gets thrown under the bus. And then, right?
The celebrities that were pushing the vaccine, they would be sacrificed as well in the public eye, things like that.
That's an interesting connection. Thank you for the light bulb there, because you're right. The Rockefeller Institute. John Hopkins Medical University.
Charlie Robinson does a lot of good coverage on that particular issue. So
yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And you also remember there was the document from the Rockefeller Institute on lockstep.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, everybody getting in on the same same wavelength for response.
Yeah.
Which is, this response was locked down, right? The response is to stop movement of peoples, is to get I think there's so many variables and reasons why, you know, but in my opinion, this is the opening salvo of the Great Reset, the decade 2020 to 2030.
Yeah.
What this all about is resetting the grand chessboard and getting people packed into cities and the word sustainability, resetting currencies to digital, the biometric surveillance system, the smart everything. That's everything that's underlying here. But if you go back, and it's what's important, I think, with these type of research, is to go back and just have an alternative view to see what really happened, especially when you have something as murky as, oh, there was just this disease and it killed 50 to 100 million people. We don't really know how many.
Right.
And then it was just from Spain and some guy got it. I mean, that's just.
Yeah. And it had three waves and it kept getting worse and worse. And then
didn't.
Then it was gone.
Yeah.
The flu, apparently.
And then again, this report is from Kevin Barry. And he says, I kind of scroll down a little bit. It says, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. He says, I do not believe that anyone involved in these vaccine experiments was trying to harm anyone. Some will see the name Rockefeller and yell Illuminati or culling the herd. I do not believe that's what happened. I believe standard medical hubris is responsible. Doctors playing God, thinking they can tame nature without creating unanticipated problems. Well, I agree with that. I mean, some of it, I think that so they just think they are God. They don't ask why or should we, just could we do it, right? The medical hubris, he says, with medical hubris, I do not think the situation has changed materially over the past 100 years. He says, what now? The vaccine industry is always looking for human test subjects. They have the most success when they are able to find populations who are not in a position to refuse. Soldiers, infants, the disabled, prisoners, those in developing nations, anyone not yet in a position to refuse. Vaccine experimentation on vulnerable populations is not an issue of the past.
Yeah.
Well, I think in response to that, I think you can have both, right? You can have a hierarchy with bad intentions all the way at the top of that pyramid, and then those who are good puppets because of their egos and their hubris below that. I mean, but I'm a Christian, and that's kind of how I view the world in general when it comes to the other side. So
it's hard to know what's in someone's head. So for him to make the claims, I mean, he wrote a great article, but we don't know what, you know, just because when he's saying, like, you know, what are the Rockefellers, you know, intentions, or what this person's intention was with the vaccine, you know, we don't know what's in someone's head. So you can't really prove that one way or another unless they come out and tell you their intentions, you know. But I think there's a lot of engineering that came from that, you know, went into all that, like 1918. And it was like a playbook for 100 years later. It seems like they always, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know? And that's kind of like with false flags and shootings and on and on and on. And also I want to just bring up one last thing that came into my head that Donald Jeffries brings up a bunch. If you go back and look at some of these historical photos, especially of baseball players and athletes, he was pointing out that some of the photos, they look questionable now in hindsight, as if like some of the masks that they're wearing in the pictures could have been, or possibly could have been added, you know, later on at a later date even. And I'm not, that goes into Sandy Hook kind of territory or whatever, but just food for thought. If you have a way of looking back at any archives, just look at the pictures and see who's wearing masks and who aren't, you know, because there were a lot of people that were refusing to wear masks back then, you know, and there's a lot of articles out there even about that. And they were ridiculed and called idiots and all these different names and everything. And that repeated too, 100 years later. You know?
I still see people every day with masks, every day.
A lot of the time in medical facilities, I notice they keep
going. I see masked people. They don't know that they're dead, right?
They don't even know that they're masked.
Well, yeah, the look at the last part of the article, I mean, he's, again, ask the question, what is, I'm thinking of the movie Nixon and Bob Haldeman, who worked for Nixon, and he kept trying to figure out that, you know, they have the 18 and a half minute gap on the tape. And Nixon always would just get really nervous when they started getting into the Bay of Pigs.
Yeah.
Anything related to
Kennedy,
Black Ops and Kennedy. And he would just try to shut him up and don't, you know, and there's all this coded messages in there. Bob Haldeman kept asking, what's this dynamite in the Bay of Pigs thing? He kept asking, that was Kennedy's thing. Well, this made me think of that because you got to ask yourself, what is it with the medical community and their worship of vaccine? I mean, they just, it's like you touch on something, like you cross their religion when you question. I mean, it's just, you question the science and I mean, everywhere. And I'm thinking, I even talked about this before 2020. I kept asking the question, okay, let's say I'm a skeptic and I don't want to get vaccine. I don't want any vaccines. Let's say I don't want them. Yeah. You get yours. Why are you in danger?
Right.
I'm the one that's in danger. I didn't get anything, but that's not the way it works. The way it works is everybody's got to get it because your seatbelt doesn't work unless I put mine on.
You're going to kill grandma.
And my bulletproof vest doesn't work unless you wear yours. And so again, it's just the same weird logic, but there's dynamite there. You question it. Think about this. If there was a full blown mainstream media with all the resources and all the fact finding and even universities, if they went into this story and just started unearthing it, and you find out that the so-called Spanish flu was not Spanish, it didn't originate in Spain, and it wasn't even a flu, it was an outbreak from an experimental vaccine, that really tears down a whole lot of belief systems and everything else. You have to bury that in the past. There's something to it. It's kind of like when we talked about, and we briefly, when we went over 1913 on our last breakdown show of 13, it was, we talked about the Titanic.
Yeah.
And there was something kind of weird with it. And there's people still talk about the Spanish flu, and for different reasons. You have, like, we just pulled up the National Geographic article and it's, oh, it originated in China. Where in this article or any other Lou Rockwell thing I put, the word China is not in there.
Exactly. Yeah.
But everybody's got their theory, right?
Different angles. Go on at the same time. Confuses everyone.
Who controls the present, right? Or who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past. That's Orwell.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So
what do you think, Mr. Anderson? You're back there. You reading Burt's Gold Page or what?
I'm looking for better prices. No, I'm playing Bert. With you. I just had to throw you off. No, I, as I mentioned previously, I think this was a really good topic of conversation because you go back 100 years and then again, kind of think about what happened to us just a couple years ago. And it's always the same tricks. It seems like it's the same lies and tactics. They're just repackaged a certain way. And maybe it did come out of nature, something like that. There are just so many similarities and so many things that get you to scratch your head. But the biggest to me is just how much deceit there is. If this is really supposed, if history is supposed to be an accurate recounting of what happened, why do we have to dig so deep to understand what really happened? What are you hiding? So that's what I always come back to when I think about issues like this. And also, I'm kind of laughing, and it's probably inappropriate, but imagining the Titan submarine vessel being a hot water heater with a remote controller from an Xbox. I'm just saying.
And we're going to take a hot water heater to the
That whole story is so bizarre. My mother's obsessed with it because she likes the Titanic. I'm like, it's not the same thing. Yeah, they were going down. It's a whole, I don't know. It still has people like watching videos over and over again. I'm like, they knew it exploded like fairly, yeah, like fairly soon after it did. And they kept telling everybody that they were going to lose air. And right then and there, you shows how much truth you get right there from these agencies and everything, you know?
I didn't know James Cameron was kind of a deep sea explorer to the extent he was until this happened. I mean, he's gone down very much deeper than that independently.
He went down 33 times.
33? Yeah.
To the Titanic?
33.
To the Titanic. Oh, yeah. Wow, because he's a Mason. He likes Pike.
And he's possibly related to Dr. Cameron from Canada of the MK Ultra program.
Okay.
The Canadian aspect of that.
I enjoyed his preview documentaries on AI called Terminator.
Terminator 1. And Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Yes. They were excellent, especially the second one.
I tried to warn you about the AI. I went to Titanic. I went down 33 times.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of, I didn't, for instance, until y'all mentioned it, the people who went down with the Titanic were some of the most vocal people opposed to the Fed.
J.P. Morgan, I guess he left his ticket behind and went to see his mistress in France, or so the story goes. Well, so he missed.
He died the next year anyway. So that's right. J.P. Yeah. Morgan was 18.
The silver lining, he still died.
1837. He lived his life spanned the years between when the Central Bank of the United States was gone. We didn't have one from 1837 to 1913, the exact lifespan of J.P. Morgan.
Wow.
That's weird.
A little weird, huh?
You didn't think about it like that.
Yeah. I do.
No. It came down on me, yeah.
Wow. That's the way it's my wheelhouse. I always go back to that. Well, this has been a fun talk. I've wanted to do this for a while. I'm glad you guys joined me on it because when I was doing my live shows, you just kind of got a hit. And this article was too much. And I need a panel, you know, unless I could do it by myself, but I'd much rather talk to you guys when I do it. And you would not want to do this live. It's just too many. It's too many variables and too many things to talk about. So I just never did. I shelved it. I remember, you know, when I had my day at Monday through Fridays, 3 p.m. Central Time, I was doing an hour during, you know, the height of 2020, everything was happening. I had stacks of papers in here. And this was one of the articles. And I think I talked to Mr. Anderson months ago. I said, we should do the show. And then that got shelved. Anyway, we came back to it. So I'm really glad.
It was a good bookend to the Dawn interview. You know, it was a good bookend to the COVID stuff we were covering.
Yeah, and I hope the audience will be getting downloads from all over the world. I mean, because we got two different channels. You got the Arterburn Radio Transmission podcast and then Paratruther itself, which it mirrors that feed. And then you got the Rockfin on channel on America Unplugged channel on Rockfin and other outlets that it goes to. And I just appreciate everybody who tunes in. These are just the informal conversations. We have a little bit of history. You know, we get I love the opinions of both of you guys. I mean, you got some great insight. I don't want to close yet unless you've got something you want to add. And we could never cover everything with this, but it at least gets the conversation going because it's weird. It's weird. There's so much evidence to show that there's no doubt they're running, you know, this is like the prototype of the experimental vaccines, like in the infancy of this technology,
yeah,
with unintended consequences. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And using military age men and people that can't say no, because I've been that guy. You really can't. At some you can at some level, but
it's like, you know, the Tuskegee Airmen. They were experimented on, you know, with syphilis, right?
The Tuskegee experiments, yes. Yeah. And then people from all over, all walks of life and different, you know, the disadvantaged and the poor and people that can't, they don't know that they're getting experimented on.
Mental wards, they use people in those a lot.
Or when they put things in the subway, you know, the military industrial.
Yeah. Problems. In New York City, they just, yeah, they literally out the back of a car trunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or were they sprayed San Francisco? Oh yeah, they back in the '50s, Mr. Anderson. They blanketed San Francisco with a bacteria.
Yeah.
To see what it would do. It was kind of an inert thing, but they could see how long the infection would last and who could pick it up and if it could be transmitted through the air, like through planes or wherever they deliver with little balloons or whatever.
Like the Tuskegee experiments that they did too.
They said they were treating them and they just decided to not treat them and give them placebos and see how long and what the lasting effects of syphilis would be on African Americans.
Oh, I thought they actually gave them syphilis.
Well, they could have. I think they did give them syphilis too, but I think they were supposed to be treating. There's supposed to be a clinic to treat it, and then that was the guise of it, and then it just turned. They just watched them, you know, which is like one of the most heinous, evil things you could possibly do when you have the power to heal somebody and you don't. I mean, you are there's a special place in hell for you for doing something like that to a human being. But
there's a documentary that's on YouTube that I'll try to find it and send you guys the link. But apparently that San Francisco test with the subways, they filmed that as a documentary. Like the agency that was responsible for it, unless the footage is bogus, they show you the cab and the trunk being open with the briefcase that is then brought into the subway and just left there to spray out whatever, you know, pathogens or whatever they wanted to experiment on people with. And it's all filmed. I don't know if it's, you know, if the footage is fake or not, or they literally had the balls to film like them actually doing this, and because it shows the guy take it out of the cab trunk and go into the subway, and the camera follows him down, and he literally puts it he puts one briefcase on the ground, like near a group of people that are waiting for the subway, and then he has another one that he literally waits for the subway to stop, and he puts it on a seat in the subway car itself. And meanwhile, they showed you before he took it out of the trunk in broad daylight in front of everybody, you see it actually something being sprayed out of it, like a mist coming out of both briefcases. Hmm. And it was on Facebook. It was kind of a viral thing, but it was from it was from a long time ago, this documentary.
And well, they had one of the most virile things, most heinous developments of Fort Detrick, which is really an offshoot of Operation Paperclip. The Nazi scientists imported after the end of World War II, they developed something called brucellosis. And brucellosis is it's a bacteria, much like what we just talked about, that was the offshoots of the vaccine, supposedly to treat meningitis. It was a bacteria that can be passed along person to person and spread into the put into the everyday environment, right? So of people. And so a lot of people think that brucellosis, and it just attacks your immune system and attacks you on and it's a long-term thing, it wears you down. A lot of people think that's what Gulf War syndrome is. And that was covered in Jim Mars's book, Population Control, that somehow it's just basically that we lost. And same thing with Lyme disease. Lyme disease was another offshoot of lots of evidence to show it was a bioweapon created by Fort Detrick, you know. Yeah. And again, that's another.
And the Nazis were using ticks and mosquitoes for bioweapons, right? And apparently we brought that over with paperclip and everything.
Yeah, nothing to see here. They just released all those genetically engineered mosquitoes in Texas, and now they have malaria. It's funny, you got to, you know, the medicine's worse than the disease sometimes, folks. But Well, Mr. Anderson, I want to go to, I know you don't want anybody to find you or know where you are in your undisclosed location. So you don't have websites or.
Well, you've said you've stayed at my house in Taiwan. So, you know.
That's true. I did. But he, Mr. Anderson lives in a VPN. I actually have to skip around in different realities when I stay with him. He goes from one area to the next and I'm transported with him, which is, but you do have an OnlyFans page, don't you? Have you can find him on OnlyFans.
Yeah, he lives in Australia. At the same time, he's living in
it's Pakistan. Literally, his house is a VPN. I mean, you go into it, and then all of a sudden, I'm transported around. The view changes.
To the Matrix?
If I had an OnlyFans, I'd have to pay people to watch me. But no, I mean, I think we covered a lot. As you pointed out, Tony, it's kind of like a starter kit. Now, you know, if you're still interested, you can pull on those threads as much as you want. I mean, all this conversation makes me want to do things like watch 12 Monkeys again.
Right.
I haven't seen that in a long time. But wasn't Brad Pitt, wasn't he the son of like somebody who was very influential in the movie?
Right.
Yeah. It's just weird. The more you talk about things and examine the history and then watch kind of the nuggets maybe they put out there for you.
Oh, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon by Dave McGowan. He connects all the dots. There's usually some kind of a military or intelligence connection with most people in Hollywood and the music scenes.
But yeah, I mean, what do you think, Chris?
What with the episode today?
Yeah.
I think it was, like I was saying before, I think it was a great bookend to the interview that we were doing with Donald about masking the truth. I think that was really good that we kind of not put this whole subject to bed, but we were maybe going forward, we're able to kind of dive into things like Stanley Kubrick or the moon landing stuff, you know. But I feel like this was a kind of crucial to kind of touch upon that. And I wasn't even aware, Tony, that you had been planning a show about that article for so long. So in a way, it's like a full circle thing with that as well. So.
Yeah, that was an article you sent as well. It just wasn't the same website, the same article.
They used a lot of the same things, I noticed, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciated both of you guys being here. And I just want to say thanks to everybody who tunes in. And also, we'll be back. I'll be talking to these two gentlemen about more shows and more subject matter. And we've done a lot of hidden history, done years and stuff, and Mr. Anderson's got some great ideas on some more, not necessarily lighter subjects, but maybe some pop culture stuff, and especially Kubrick.
Future years, too. I don't mean to cut you off.
Future years, I think that's going to be fun. That's kind of a thought experiment, which I like. Yeah. Mr. Anderson and myself do thought experiments all the time, so we'll definitely be going over that. So lots of cool stuff in the future, and you're going to subscribe and share the links. This is the most uncensored show. We don't talk about much before we start, and then we just go into it. But there's a lot here. At least gives you the starting points. Gives you a little bit of tools and maybe a direction on the map of where to start looking. We won't give you all the things because we don't have them either. So there's something to this story. I think it's why it's stuck with me for the last 3 years, where I'm like, I got to talk about it. It's so weird. I got to talk about that. And it's not many things that you see on it. But if you do go to lourockwell.com, it's got 3 or 4 articles from different people on this. And so all of them are great, but I chose Kevin Barry's. Chris, and I know that you want to tell people where they can find us. One thing you didn't do and make sure.
On Twitter, I'm at Seagraves Mask Guy. And I do shows on the New Prisoners TMP platforms on Rumble and Odyssey. I do shows like Digging Chris Graves, Conspiring with Mr. Cooper. Don't take our word for it. I do too many shows and Get Mad with Chris Graves on Ocelli.com. But I've been just trying to get my health back in order. So I've been taking a break from doing a lot of those at the moment. So, but hopefully coming up soon, there'll be a whole bunch more. And I appreciate being with you two gentlemen. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you,
Chris. Likewise, thank you.
Mr. Anderson, always great to have you here. Thank you for your brain, sir. And
thanks for having me.
Thanks for all your input, and I surely appreciate it. And you made me want to go read Bert's Gold Page again. I hadn't done that in years.
That really struck a note with you, Tony. And it was just intended to throw you off topic.
You started the theme with it at the beginning of the show, and I'm using it all the way to close. I think it's fun. This is what he does this to me all the time. And even in like real life, like in the room I'm speaking, and I'm like, that's good. It's good. Keep me on my toes. I appreciate you. I really do.
Well, can I ask you one thing before we do go? Mr. Anderson, maybe you won't want to answer this, and I'll understand if that's the case, but will you be attending in New York City on September 9th for the big Free World conference?
He's invited.
No.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know I was invited, but
he's invited.
No, I hadn't given it much thought. I mean, I might. I have, okay, you know, the requisite PTO and everything. But
you might have to wear like a Michael Myers mask, though. Just
no,
William Shatner mask.
William Shatner, Captain Kirk mask. Yeah.
Only important people need disguises. this is just always a funny meme to put up there because of, you know,
not to put you on the spot.
No.
So it'd be nice to meet you in person, but
yeah, absolutely.
I like the mystique too. So, you know.
Yeah, it's I'm like the neighbor in Home
Improvement. Like Charlie's Angels. It was like, hey, Angels, you know, like my friend Six, he doesn't appear on screen either.
I should hire someone, Tony, to go and pretend to be me just to mess with Chris.
Like, hey, Mr. Anderson, are you my friend Six? I'm like, and both could probably screw me because I wouldn't know.
I thought you'd be 62.
62, yeah.
I've got some options there. We'll talk about it off camera.
Some really funny
variations of what you should look like in real life. we need to send your avatar. And actually just have someone hold up an iPad of you talking with that avatar. It's like, that's you walking through the.
I'm thinking he could have a Lucifer mask over.
Yeah, you know, there you go.
The satanic blue horse from the Denver airport.
Yeah.
Or the mask from Scream. Right.
Just wear the mask from Scream.
Another Kenny Powers reference.
That's right.
All right, folks. I'm gonna go ahead and end the show. It's a great conference. We'll do more of these very, very soon. And I've got always stay tuned for the Arterburn Radio transmission. Live on Fridays, you can find me on the Rockfin America Unplugged channel, on my Twitter at Tony Arterburn. Find my website is arterburn.news, and the sponsor of the program, which is Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
It's right here.
Minimum. Hey, yeah, Chris is wearing his Wise Wolf shirt. I don't have a minimum. If you need gold and silver, and if you say you can't afford it, yes, you can. $50 a month, you can get the Lone Wolf package, wolfpack.gold. We buy your medals for you. Check it out. I've got almost 800 members all over the country that I buy their medals for them, and it keeps shows like this on the air and other shows like Tinfoil Hat and Macroaggressions with Charlie Robinson and America Unplugged and the David Knight Show. We proudly sponsor all of those programs. So anyway, we'll be back very soon, folks. In the information war, be a paratruther. See you next time.